This is the NetGroup Investments podcast, where we explore a variety of views and insights that investors care about.
Welcome to another edition of the Top 10 in 10 podcast. I'm your host, Mansoor Naka of NetGroup Investments. And joining me today is Dwayne Dipenau, co-portfolio manager of the NetGroup Investments SA Equity Fund. Dwayne has been with Lauren Capital since 2015 and previously worked for another boutique fund manager, as well as having spent some time at a New York-based long-short hedge fund. Welcome, Dwayne.
And so, as always, it's good to be with you.
Dwayne, there's a lot to talk about, but before we kick off, I think for viewers who might be new to Lauren Capital and, you know, who might not have heard of the NetGroup Investments SA Equity Fund before, a quick refresher, I think, might be useful on the Lauren philosophy and, you know, what's your edge? What do you bring that's different?
Sure. So the Lauren philosophy, 70% of what we do is really fundamental bottom up. So looking at the quality of the company, the quality of the management team, what the balance sheet of the company looks like, free cash flow, is the earnings backed by free cash flow, and then valuation overlaying all of that. Then about 20% is sort of macro overlay. So we're very aware of sort of global interest rates, local interest rates, how that might affect how we value companies. And then 10% is really opportunistic trading. And that really comes from the hedge fund and corporate finance or investment banking background of the founders of the business. We started as a hedge fund boutique manager and then moved into long-only, managing long-only funds. And that sort of, we take advantage of corporate actions in the market or anywhere we see dislocations, and we try and take or trade those dislocations and add alpha that way as well. Over time, that's definitely helped us, and a certain percentage of alpha has come from those opportunistic trades. And the other thing that makes us slightly different is we've got a team that's very strong in covering Africa. So our African team is up on the continent often, and that really helps give certain insights when it comes to currencies, currency dislocations in countries like Nigeria, Kenya, Egypt, to the South African team. And that's very important when it comes to a lot of South African companies that has operations up in the continent. So that's sort of two of the things that give us a bit of an edge. I mean, we also totally owned by the staff at Lauren, and, you know, everyone bought equity themselves, so no one was really given equity. So we aligned with our clients and worked tirelessly to produce great results and alpha for our clients, because that's how we'll do well as well.
Thanks, Dwayne. So quite a bit of tools you've got at your disposal there. You mentioned your expertise in Africa, and one stock with a large exposure to Africa that comes to mind, and I think it's currently underweight in the portfolio, is MTN. I think Africa's been quite a good opportunity for MTN, but it's come with its own challenges as well. What's your current take on MTN and the exposure to Africa?
So look, MTN's gone through a tough time in Africa. Its largest operation on the continent was in Nigeria. And we know a few years back, the Nigerian government fined them for multiple reasons. It was over $1 billion. So it was quite a substantial sum of money. The current management team has done an exceptional job in operating on the continent and in South Africa. And we've seen earnings grow and free cash flow. They've sort of got rid of non-core assets and really focused the business. So the current management team has done a good job. But unfortunately, there are certain things that are out of their control. For instance, the Nigerian Naira, which has weakened dramatically. This is one of those places where I spoke to our African team being able to give us a bit of an edge. So we took the view quite a while back that we thought the Nigerian Naira had weakened dramatically and needed to weaken. We knew that there was no liquidity, even though certain companies were getting some cash out, the likes of MTN. But we knew that the Naira had weakened quite substantially before you would see proper liquidity in the FX market there. Because of that, we took the view that MTN earnings would be downgraded quite substantially. And the reason for that is not only do you get the depreciation of the actual currency, but you also get pressure on the EBITDA margin in country. And the reason for that is about 40% of their costs are in dollars. So obviously, as the currency weakens, their cost base goes up, and that puts pressure on their EBITDA margin. Taking that all into account with the valuation of MTN, we decided that if you look at the risk reward of the stock, it looked relatively full, and there'd be quite a lot of earnings downgrades coming through. So if you factored that into account, it actually looked expensive. And because of that, we've been underweight the stock, which has worked out quite nicely. The stock has come back quite a bit. It's trading at, I think, 113 Rand at the moment. So it's definitely looking more interesting. And we have seen a small bit of value unlock in the fintech business. So that's really the mobile money business with an investment there from MasterCard. That being said, we still think the Naira, where it's trading at about, let's call it 780, still hasn't reached fair value, and it still needs to weaken more, and that'll put further pressure on the earnings of the company and the free cash flow, so the ability of them to extract cash out of these countries like Nigeria. And so we still haven't started buying yet, but it definitely is looking more interesting than it did a few months ago.
Okay, so getting close to that point, you would say. I think another segment of the market with significant Africa exposure is, of course, the banks, and you have quite a large position within the banks, within the portfolio. What's your current take on, you know, the banks and the exposure within Africa?
So interesting, where it was a headwind for a company like MTN, the currency devaluing, for many of the banks, it's actually been a bit of a tailwind. And the reason for that is they can trade the dislocations in the currencies, and they can actually take quite a wide spread when the currency isn't at its fair value. So their trading gains have actually been very strong for the likes of Standard Bank and Absa in Africa. Our preferred bank, Absa, because of the valuation, you know, you're buying it on a 6 PE sort of a forward dividend yield of 9%. So valuation looks very attractive. About a third of their earnings in the latest result actually came out of Africa. And that's because of, firstly, there's a lot of corporates going into Africa and they can facilitate that. And secondly, when it comes to trading gains, because of the dislocations there, the margins on trading has been quite wide. So that's been very attractive. We think that remains a tailwind for the banks. So we have got large exposure to them. And Absa is actually still targeting, I mean, even though you will see some normalization in those trading gains, they're still targeting about a third of their profit coming out of Africa going forward. So we think that can be a quite nice tailwind for the banks. And thus, we've got large exposure to the banks at the moment.
I think Absa is one of those that have been sort of overly punished by the market. Is this because of that Africa, you know, growth worries within the region?
Well, interesting. For Absa, it was more specific. So they had exposure to Ghana. And there, we firstly saw the currency devalue a lot, but they had in-country exposure to Ghana. And there they had sovereign debt exposure. And because of the Ghanaian government basically defaulting on debt and the debt being restructuring, that hit their balance sheet and hit the stock price quite a lot. But that's now sort of in the base. And they've traded through that. Going forward, we think the Africa business is normalized. And as I said, you know, trading in Africa will be pretty good for Absa. And right now on a 64P, we think it looks very attractive. The big thing about Absa right now, we're seeing in the retail books in all the South African banks, we're seeing a bit of pressure because the consumer is under pressure, high interest rates, high inflation. That being said, they're very well provided. And with the view that interest rates roll over in the beginning of 2024, that should really help Absa when it comes to the credit book and the pressure on, let's say, consumers and the retail book. And on the other side, they've actually hedged out some of that interest rate risk. So as interest rates roll over and the banks, so they had great endowment effect, so their earnings grew as interest rates went up. With regards to Absa specifically, they've hedged their interest rate exposure, so they'll be less affected when interest rates come down. So their earnings should be more resilient. And putting that all together, we think it looks very attractive at the moment.
So definitely some nice cash flows coming through on the banks, you would say.
Correct. So the earnings, we should see good earnings growth on the back of that continued high dividend yields on the banks. And we think the balance sheet, you know, if you're worried about credit losses, et cetera, the balance sheets are well provided and the banks are well managed from that perspective.
I want to move on to another topical issue that's been in the news lately, and that's Naspers and Prosus. And of course, the sudden departure of the CEO. Do you think the market was expecting this, and what's your thoughts around this?
So I think there were definitely questions around Bob van Dijk and his position and tenure at Naspers or Prosus. The reason being is if you look at the various verticals that were set up, so it's classifieds, payments, food delivery, and edtech, he brought in quite a few employees with him from eBay, and they headed up those various divisions. And multiple of those people that he brought along with him have been or have moved on. So the market was questioning whether how long he would stay. It was a bit of a surprise, but I can't say it was a total surprise to the market. Generally, there has been a lot of questions around this management team's capital allocation. So, you know, they've sold down a lot of Tencent and they've done some really good things. So the buybacks have been great and helped narrowing the discount. But they have taken a lot of that capital and allocated to new areas like, for instance, Delivery Hero, where they bought at a share price much higher than where it's currently trading. So there were a lot of questions around their capital allocation. And I think the board took that view. He's been there for about 10 years. And so I think there was differences between his view and the board's view. And because of that, so they sort of amicably agreed that he would move on. The new sort of acting CEO is Ervin Tsu. He's now stepped in. He was CIO of the business. He's got an interesting background. So originally at Goldman Sachs, then worked at SoftBank, and then worked at the Vision Fund there, which we know invested in many interesting assets along with some dubious investments. The more interesting assets he oversaw was investment in Uber, which obviously did well. And so interesting background, comes across very well. But I mean, there's still questions about him, and we'll have to see how it goes forward and what he does with regards to capital allocation. The large question is, I mean, first and foremost, they've kept the strategy around the group the same. So they've now unwound the cross-holding structure. So the structure of the group is now sort of permanently in place going forward. Then they said they're going to unlock value in what they call the core assets. So assets outside the listed assets, Tencent. Firstly, by getting them profitable in the first half of financial year 25. And secondly, unlocking value in those assets with regards to IPOs or trade sales. So they've maintained that. And I think he'll do a good job in doing that. But the next step would be, does he now take some of the capital that the business is sitting in and start allocating it into new verticals or investing in new areas like AI, where the market will be very skeptical because of the track record of the past management team. So there are questions around what he does with regards to that. But generally, I think the market was of the view that a management change was needed.
Thanks, Dwayne. So definitely one to keep your eye on. And if I know you, it's definitely one that you're very close to yourself.
Well, look, it's a large counter in our market. So it's a large part of the index and the biggest company listed here. We still think Tencent, which is their core asset, obviously a Chinese-based asset, looks extremely attractive. And then on top of that, if you invest in Naspers Process, you're buying it at quite a big discount. And you've got the buybacks, the ongoing buybacks on both lines that will support that discount and hopefully narrow it even further. So if you take that all into account, we think the risk-reward on Naspers Process still looks very attractive.
You mentioned Tencent. I suppose you can't speak about Naspers Process without mentioning Tencent. So just given, you know, maybe as a last question, given the growth worries in China, what's the update on Tencent?
So look, there's definitely all the sort of macroeconomic data out of China has been weaker than expected since you saw sort of the reopening at the beginning of the year from COVID. That being said, a lot of the worries really center around the property sector in China, where the government brought in quite onerous regulations. And that's a large part of the savings pool for the average consumer in China. So that's really dented confidence of the average consumer. And so we've seen spending sort of come down. I mean, the key drivers for a company like Tencent are really games. Well, firstly, they've got a huge platform. So it's basically Weixin is the WhatsApp of China. They've got the YouTube of China and a whole bunch of other platforms. So their key drivers are firstly selling games, which is still growing in China. And part of that business, over a third of that business is now actually international. So games all over the world. And that's also growing very strongly. It's advertising. And sort of that we've seen a big resurgence since reopening from COVID. So that's positive. And then they've also got a payments business, which does fluctuate. That's probably the most cyclical part of the business. But that, with the opening of the economy there, we have seen that business get a bit of traction as well. And then lastly, they've got quite a big cloud business. And the cloud business, like you would see Azure or Amazon Web Services in the States, is quite in a nascent stage in China. So there's huge opportunities to grow that. And that's still growing quite nicely. So if you put that all together, it's quite a diversified business from an income perspective. And really, the key drivers behind it are slightly different from the macroeconomic worries in China. So we still think you should get good earnings growth out of the counter. And right now, if you take out, it's got quite a big portfolio of associate investments. If you take that off the valuation, then you're buying the business on sort of a 14 forward PE. In fact, slightly lower now, I'm probably a 13 forward PE. So we think that with good earnings growth going forward makes it quite a compelling investment case.
And I suppose even more attractive if you entering via Process.
And then in the investing in Process, you're obviously getting that asset along with a whole bunch of other emerging market internet assets at a 40% discount. And we expect that discount to continue narrowing.
Dwayne, I think we'll leave it there for today. I thank you so much for your time and your insights. Really fascinating listening to you. To everyone else, thanks so much for joining us today. Till next time, goodbye.
This podcast is for marketing information only. The information contained in the podcast or video was for information purposes and does not constitute advice, recommendation, or an offer or solicitation to purchase or sell any funds or strategies to any person in any jurisdiction in which the offer, recommendation, or solicitation to purchase would be unlawful.